All right, welcome everybody to our November 29th Tick Back meeting. We've got one item on our agenda, but before we get started, I'm going to have Brandy to go ahead and take roll. Brandy?
Judge Conklin?
I'm present.
Ms. Fleming? Judge Getty? Judge Fannin? Judge Gabe?
Present.
All right. Judge Kelly? Judge Larsh? Judge Merrifield?
Present.
All right, thank you. Judge Reinhart said he would be absent. Judge Ryan? Judge Sachs? Judge Siebert? Ms. Bartleson?
Present.
Thank you. And Judge Larsh, I just see you've joined. Ms. Cameron?
Present.
Thank you. Mr. Finke?
Here.
Mr. Kim? Mr. Landry? Going to be absent. Ms. Levere?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Riley?
Here.
Thank you. Judge Kelly, I see that you're here. Thank you.
Sorry, Mike.
No problem. Mr. Rule?
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Good afternoon. I'm present.
Great. And I'm just taking one more pink. Thank you. Advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
Yes, here.
Thank you. Mr. Theodorovich?
I'm here. Good morning.
Thank you.
Or afternoon. And
good afternoon. And our liaison member, Judge Callum Carrion.
I'm here.
Does that make us good?
We have 13 members. Yes. Oh, yes.
This is Judge Fannin. I came late.
Oh, Judge Fannin, thank you so much.
And Judge Ryan also.
All right.
We're in good Judge shape. Larsh also.
Judge Larsh, I got you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Better than ever.
All right. Much better turnout. Thank you very much. And okay.
Thank you all so much. Yep. Thanks so much for joining in today, folks. I hope you had a pleasant Thanksgiving. It's a rather brief agenda today. I would like to turn to John Wardlaw at the start. As some of you may have heard, our budget is, as we anticipated, changing. And maybe not for the better. And I thought, and John was kind enough to sort of maybe give us a little bit of just a preview of what's to come. John?
Yeah, thank you, Judge Conklin, and good afternoon, committee members. With regard to the macro budget and state level, wanted to call your attention. In mid-November, the Legislative Analyst Office, there are two entities that do fiscal forecasting for the state that really define and make a big difference as far as where we ultimately land is budgetarily. That's the Legislative Analyst Office and the State Department of Finance. The LAO, Legislative Analyst Office, mid-November came out with their projection for next fiscal year that begins next July. And they are projecting a pretty significant budget shortfall to the tune of about $25 billion. And so, you know, grim news, not really surprising given the markets and the way things are looking, but the magnitude of the budget challenge is about $25 billion as projected. The governor will get his projections early December from his State Department of Finance, and that's really the projection that will most influence his spending plan that he will propose on January 10th. And so I just wanted to call your attention to the latest news on the budget front. The size of the budget, you know, the current year is in excess of $300 billion. And so when you talk about a $25 billion hole, it is significant, but as far as the size of the overall budget, it's important to have that context as well. We are having discussions with the administration. A big thank you to Judge Merrifield as well as Rebecca Fleming for their participation in our conversations with the Department of Finance about our priorities. They've been good discussions, but a lot of it is pending based on just how much funding the governor's going to have to work with that he will find out in the coming weeks. So that's it. Wanted to keep you guys abreast of the most current fiscal projections that we're aware of. Happy John, to thanks. Answer any questions.
Thanks so much. Any questions for John? Recognize this is all preliminary stuff. Questions for John right now?
Judge Conklin, if I may.
Sure.
Yeah, this is David Yamasaki. John, thanks very much for the update. One of the things that we were facing entering this budget year was Sal. I don't think that becomes into play this upcoming budget year if the revenues come in, hopefully not what is being projected, but based on revenues that come in for the upcoming budget year.
Thoughts? Yeah, thank you, David. So with regard to Sal is state appropriations limit. There are, often it's called the GAN limit, there are these structural limits as to how much spending ultimately the legislature has when you have growth budgets occurring. And so in the last few years, as you saw, there was just tremendous surplus, and the governor and the legislature were facing spending limits based on what the Sal limit, GAN limits. And so when you have down years, those limitations aren't playing in. And so I don't expect, David, to see challenges on that front. Our highest priority proposal, as you know, is the request for an inflationary adjustment. We have asked for an indexing to the state's consumer price index, and a pretty substantial request based on the 8.3% interest rate that the state is currently facing. That's to the tune of about $205 million for that request. We are still pushing hard for a inflationary adjustment. On the basis that it really, inflation erodes the current budget. So it's not like you're trying to grow your budget. It is, hey, we're just trying to keep pace with where we're at, you know, when the budget was signed. And so, you know, good conversations going on, but we don't know how much the governor's actually going to have to work with. David, did I answer your question?
You sure did. Thank you so very much.
Thanks very much, Sean. Any other questions for John on this, on the preliminary budget projections? Okay, hearing none. John, again, thanks so much as always for these very informative updates. We have one item on our agenda today, folks. It's the Firearm Relinquishment Grant Program. It is an action.
Judge Conklin, this is Kim. Did you want a motion for approval of the minutes?
You know what, Kim? That would probably be a great idea. It's always nice.
So moved.
All right. And it's moved. I'm sorry. Who was that second?
Marsh.
Moved and seconded that the minutes that I just neglected be approved. Any objection to the motion to approve the minutes? Thanks for the backup, Kim. I'll deem
nope. The minutes
approved. David, go ahead.
No objection. I was absent, so I will be abstaining.
Great. And actually, we found a rules clarification that does clarify, just for future reference, that you don't have to abstain if you're absent from a meeting for approving the minutes, just for whatever it's worth. We always do it, but Brandy checked, and sure enough, you don't have to, just for information only. But with that, we'll show an abstention, otherwise a unanimous approval of the minutes. And now I think, Brandy, have I missed anything? Or Kim?
Yeah. Okay. No written public comment was received for the meeting.
Dynamite. Excellent. Okay. So this is a consideration of a family law and juvenile law advisory committee recommendation for new methodology to allocate the one-time funding included in the 2022 Budget Act to 7 trial courts for firearms relinquishment program funding. It's a recommendation again from FAMJUV. This is new funding from the 2022 Budget Act. There's pretty tight strings around this allocation, but Greg Tanaka with Centers for Family, Children, and the Courts is with us to help us understand both those parameters and the recommendation that's set forth in your materials. So I'll turn to Greg. Greg?
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon. I will first share my screen because we have a PowerPoint presentation that goes along with our discussion today. All right. Just wanted to confirm that everyone can see my screen. Great. Thank you. So my name is Greg Tanaka. I'm a supervising attorney at the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts, and I oversee our programs related to domestic violence, family law, and staff support to the Advisory Committee on Providing Access and Fairness. Thank you again for having us today to present to you the recommended grant allocations for the Firearm Relinquishment Grant Program on behalf of the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee. I'll now let my colleague introduce herself as well to start our presentation.
Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Always want to make sure we're not on mute. Okay. Thanks for letting us intrude on your lunch hour. My name is Frances Ho. I'm also an attorney with the council. I work on domestic violence policies and education. And as you know, we're here today to present recommendations from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee to award 7 courts with approximately $18 million in one-time funding in total, and that would be to support firearm relinquishment efforts. Next slide, please, Greg. We're just going to spend about 10 minutes to give you an overview of the funding, the eligibility requirements, the review and application process, and some highlights of the applications that we received. So the enabling legislation is Assembly Bill 178, and it's to support a court-based firearm relinquishment program, which is pretty unique. You know, there has been funding in the past to law enforcement, right, which is what you typically think of, law enforcement on the ground getting the guns. But this one is unique in that it's a court partnership with law enforcement to ensure the consistent and safe removal of firearms from individuals who are court ordered not to have them. I find it helpful to also talk about Senate Bill 320 when we talk about this one-time funding. So as some of you may be aware of, Senate Bill 320 went into effect the beginning of this year, and it really expanded the court's role in ensuring that firearms are properly relinquished in domestic violence and juvenile restraining order matters. And this requires the courts to do a number of things, including notifying law enforcement and a prosecuting agency when a person has violated the firearms prohibition. So implementation of Senate Bill 320 is one of the use cases for this one-time funding. Courts can also use this funding to address compliance in other civil cases, like gun violence restraining orders, elder abuse restraining orders, civil harassment, for example, as well as criminal cases. However, the legislature did specifically require that priority be given to programs that will focus on civil cases, which all of our applicants that we received for this round did. Next slide, please. So, as I mentioned, this funding is one time. We're not used to receiving money to implement new laws, but here is an opportunity. It's $40 million that was allocated at the beginning of this fiscal year in July and must be spent by June 30th of 2025. At least $36 million needs to go directly to the courts to fund relinquishment efforts and also law enforcement as well. And up to $4 million may be retained by the council to administer the program and to also have an evaluation piece. And the evaluation piece is going to require the council to contract with a research center like UC Davis's Firearm Violence Research Center. Next slide, Greg, and I'll hand it over to you to talk about eligibility.
Thanks, Frances. So as was mentioned, all superior courts were eligible to apply to support new or expanded firearm relinquishment efforts and activities by the court and law enforcement agency partners. Each court had to partner with at least one law enforcement agency with at least 30% of the total proposed budget allocated to the law enforcement agency or agencies if there were multiple partners. The law enforcement agency activities were defined as those that could not reasonably and safely be conducted by the court under the Budget Act. As part of AB 178, The courts and LEA, or law enforcement partners, also had to agree to participate in any data collection required by the Judicial Council or the research entity the council contracts with or contracts with to evaluate the programs. At a minimum, priorities set out in AB 178 for the Judicial Council to use in selecting grants for applications received included firearm relinquishment activities related to domestic violence restraining orders, gun violence restraining orders, or any other civil court order. So essentially civil court orders. Next, they prioritized high numbers of DVROs, or domestic violence restraining orders, or gun violence restraining order requests being filed per capita for an applicant county. And also the bill set out to prioritize diversity in geographic, both geographic and court size. The additional requirement that we had as well was that courts and law enforcement agencies could not supplant existing firearm relinquishment programs or funds already in place for those activities, or that were not directly related to firearm relinquishment. All eight applicant courts met all the priorities, as Francis mentioned, and also represented a fairly diverse pool geographically and for the size of the court based on the number of courts that actually applied. Two were from small northern counties, two from medium counties in the central coast and Bay Area, and four were from large counties from Southern California or the Bay Area.
And Greg, I believe we have a question from Judge Sachs.
Sure. I'm sorry. I can't see the questions because I'm sharing.
No worries.
Yes.
Sorry. I just came in late. Just wanted to try to let everybody know I'm here, but late.
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Sachs. So in terms of the review process, shortly after the funding was provided to the council, it was decided that the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee would have purview over the grant and the process. A review group was established, comprised of seven members. Five were from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee. And we also sought the expertise of other committees and invited one member from the Criminal Law Advisory Committee, as well as one from Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee, who were on the review group. The group was comprised of judicial officers, a court administrator, a help center manager, and two domestic violence advocates. It was a very well-rounded group that got a lot done in a very short amount of time. This group came up with proposed recommendations that went to the full Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee for their consideration and approval. The draft Judicial Council report that you were provided today with your materials reflects the recommendations as proposed by the review group, and that was unanimously approved by the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee on November 14th.
Great. More to go, Greg?
Yes. Sorry, I'll hand it over to Francis, who has a few more.
Just a couple more minutes, you promise. We'll let you eat your lunch.
We have plenty of time.
As Greg mentioned, we had eight courts apply. However, one court, Lassen Superior Court, withdrew during the review process. So that left us with a total of seven applications to consider. Just wanted to highlight a few things. Four of the applicants seek to expand an existing firearm relinquishment program, which we thought was interesting. Three would partner with their district attorney's office, which was a surprise. The district attorney wasn't a law enforcement agency that we thought people would propose as their law enforcement partner, but essentially they would have their investigators perform the same duties that a law enforcement officer would to enforce relinquishment orders, including investigating and getting the guns. Two proposals included a technology component. Los Angeles seeks to pilot an electronic notification process for informing law enforcement of firearm noncompliance and domestic violence restraining order matters. And San Mateo seeks to pilot a chatbot to respond to questions about how to properly relinquish firearms. Some examples of the activities proposed to be funded include court staff time for compliance review hearings, like court reporter time and court clerk time, court clerk time for increased filings anticipated, court staff time to collect data and coordinate the program with law enforcement and other agencies, and law enforcement time to investigate, to serve orders, to provide information to those subject to orders about how to properly relinquish their firearms, and also training for law enforcement. So if all these courts are awarded what is recommended, we're still left with about half of the pot of money, or about $17 million. And we've already started planning for round two, where we would invite all courts to apply for the remaining funds. Next slide, please. So just to show you what we did in round one and what we're proposing for round two, in round one, the goal was really to get the money out as quickly as we could, knowing that it had to go through our approval process. So the application period was really about a month and change. And what we suspect is, courts that maybe were interested could not find a law enforcement partner within that time. So for round two, we're really trying to give courts as much time as we can. And so possibly up to 8 months to submit an application. And also want to clarify that they just need to find a law enforcement partner that will commit. There doesn't have to be an MOU in place. That wouldn't happen until after a grant award. For round two, we also hope to connect interested courts with those courts who already applied. And as staff, we could help facilitate that communication among courts and also share some lessons learned from round one. So that's it for what we have to present to you, and we're happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, thank you to both of you. Any questions for either of our presenters concerning this recommendation?
Judge Conklin, this is David Yamasaki. One question. There seems to be a variability in the amount of the funds, grant funds that were being provided to the different courts, and it's not necessarily connected to the size of the court. So you'll see some courts that are medium receiving less dollars or more dollars than courts that are recognized as larger. And it was the basis for the recommended allocation amount based on some sort of itemized description of how they were going to use the funds.
Greg, do you want me to start, and you feel free to jump in?
Sure.
It really was based on what their ask was, to answer your question. It's a real mix because there are some courts that have never done this before, so it's hard to know what they would need versus a court or a community like San Mateo who has an established program that they've been running for a few years. And so their number is quite high in relation to their county size, but they also are growing their program and have more experience and perhaps know more about the resources that are needed.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful.
So there will be a true up procedure, so to speak, where at the end of the period, these counties will report back what they've spent, and what wasn't spent, I think, is addressed in recommendation number two, but that's reallocated out to the awarded courts. Is that accurate?
Correct, Judge Conklin. Right. Yes. We're anticipating of going out like 12 months from the first date, sometime in February, to give the courts time to true up, as you said, and ask if anyone has unspent funds at that point to reallocate amongst the other courts that were awarded.
Very good. Thank you.
This is Judge Siebert, if I can interrupt for a second. My question is, I when I read the materials, it looked like it said something like maybe 24 courts participated in a Zoom meeting when this was first rolled out. I mean, is the reason that there's so few courts that have applied because maybe we, didn't give enough information to people would even know to apply? Because I can't understand why only 24 courts would participate and why only 7 or 8 would apply. Obviously there's a lot of money left over, in part because so few did. So I'm just wondering if there's going to be something done differently in round two to generate more applicants and more interest. Thank you.
And then Judge Getty, I see your hand, so we'll let him respond to this.
And I'm hoping my microphone works this time. Please tell me it is. All right. And Francis Ho, it's terrific to see you again, one of my favorite people. And I really, because I do know Frances used to be from Solano County, she's always from Solano County in my mind. And I wanted her grant to be successful, and I wanted her to know that Solano County tried, and I tried. I could not get law enforcement. It was a short time period, I will tell you that. But for law enforcement to take on one more thing right now was a significant challenge. And they're all strapped. They cannot fill vacancies. Taking on another new program that was not accompanied by tools that they need to do their job, like search warrants and the things that you need in order to go be successful in this grant, was a significant barrier to me. I'm happy to hear that the DAs, I was going to work on probation next, that they were willing to do it, but that was a huge barrier. Yet I see this as a great opportunity for our courts to do a better job with following up with firearm relinquishment. I would kind of be interested if there was a way to not require partnership with law enforcement as, and I don't know enough about whether there is a way around that, because our court would have loved to have done something creative for this funding, but we could not get the partners to join.
So could both of you comment on both of those aspects? One, I mentioned earlier the parameters around this grant. And secondarily, Judge Siebert's concern is this, was this a lack of information provided to the courts, or is it more in line with Judge Getty, which she apparently has let us know that the courts were aware of it, but the parameters are such that getting participation from the required partners prevented the participation. I'll let you address that.
I can go ahead and start, Greg. So anecdotally, I think it is in line with what Judge Getty said. We even had a court that contacted us, I think the day before the deadline, said law enforcement just got back to us. They said they're interested, and they were able to submit an application. And so we're hoping that by giving courts more time for round two, that might help with part of the problem. Also knowing that the district attorney's office is an option might work for other communities. In terms of the parameters, it would require a legislative change. We would have to go to legislature and ask them to change the conditions of the funding.
So Judge Getty's correct. Courts can't fly on their own on this one.
That's correct. Greg, did you have anything to add?
No, I think you addressed both of those points. Thank you.
And Judge so Siebert. Good to see you, Judge Getty.
Judge Siebert, does that address your concern as well? I don't mean to speak for our speakers, but it does appear this was more of a parameters issue for participation rather than a lack of communication out to the courts about applying for the grant.
Yeah, it answers my question, but I guess it with only 24 courts participating in the initial meeting, the rollout meeting, that means there's a lot of courts that didn't participate, and it's hard to imagine, and I don't know this, but that all those people didn't even participate in the meeting because they knew they couldn't get law enforcement. I suspect that of the 24 that actually went to the meeting by Zoom, those are the ones who would know whether they could get law enforcement. Now, I'm not saying I know that, but there's a lot of money that's sitting there that people aren't seeking to participate in. When you get less than half of the courts to participate, it suggested to me that maybe we need to do a little bit more to generate interest from these other courts so that this money doesn't get wasted in the sense of not being able to be used. Every court has a need for enforcing these relinquishment orders, and it's pretty sloppy for most people, I think, in practice without some outside help. Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it.
I don't disagree. I'll let Brandy, if she has anything to add, but as we've seen in years past, a lot of this grant funding is very problematic for courts. So grant funding in and of itself, and again, I don't want to speak out of turn, Brandy can address this too, but sometimes the courts just don't have the ability to apply for the grant itself. It's just so much work. So that's why sometimes we've seen grant funding in the past where very few courts, they read it, and they said, we can't participate. I see Judge Larch's hand up. Brandy, did you want to supplement my comments at all before we turn to Judge Larch?
Just to add to that, what we've seen kind of like with the court reporter, grant is that the commitment could be difficult as well if there isn't ongoing funding to support the criteria of the grant. So thank you.
Judge Lars, did you have a comment?
I just want to say I agree with Judge Getty. And Francis, I think it's fantastic the DA has jumped in some of the counties. I'd like to see how that goes, because that takes the executive branch and really controls the law enforcement. And if you have a DA investigator looking into it and they find that there's more that they need to write the search warrant on or go in and do further investigation, they can run through that, and it takes that court out of that position of an executive position, so to speak. And I think that that's very helpful in pursuing the goal of the law. When the court has to do it and then work with law enforcement on their own, I think it puts us in a precarious situation where contempt is really our only power that we have, and our hands are tied. The DA being involved, I think, would help. And I think that's, we'll see some interesting consequences as a result. So good job on that.
Very good.
And can I just piggyback? Thank you, Judge Larsh, for raising that point, because one of the applicant courts actually proposed some prosecutor time to request warrants if needed. So yeah, thank you.
Good. Any additional questions or comments? Folks, the recommendations are set forth in your materials. I know you can read, but just briefly, there are two parts. One, to approve the allocation and distribution of the $18.5 million to the seven trial courts or expanded firearms for new or expanded firearms or relinquishment programs for 22-23 through 24-25, and then delegate authority to the Family Juvenile Law Advisory Committee to reallocate and distribute any unspent funding from those grant awards to any of the awarded courts based on the same criteria. So I would invite a motion concerning those recommendations.
Bartleson moves for approval as presented.
Is there a second?
Riley will second.
Thank you. It's been moved and approved that, pardon me, it's been moved and seconded that the two recommendations set forth in your materials as just recited be approved. It's now open for any further discussion or question. Hearing no further discussion or question, is there any opposition to the recommendation as set forth in the materials?
Judge, Neil just posed a question. If they're a recipient court, should they abstain?
Do we have any recipient courts of the, any of the seven courts or recipient courts on TICPAC?
Yeah, San Mateo is a recipient, proposed recipient court. That's why I asked.
Yeah, Brandy, is that, we do a lot of allocations of courts in the past where they're not required to abstain.
No, that is true. It's kind of a mixed bag, Judge. When it is allocations going out to 58 trial courts, we usually don't see abstentions. However, when we're in like fiscal planning subcommittee and there is a request particular to a court and there are a handful of courts for consideration, we have seen abstentions in that instance.
Okay.
Santa Clara is also a recipient, but I feel comfortable voting on it under the circumstances of that have been presented.
Okay. Neil, thanks for the clarification. If anybody chooses to abstain, obviously that's not a problem. Are there any abstentions to the requested recommendations? And hearing no abstentions, are there any objections to the requested recommendations? Hearing no abstentions or recommendations or objections, therefore, I'll deem the two recommendations unanimously approved by the committee. Brandy, do we have any more business today?
No, that covers it for today. Thank you.
Do we have another scheduled TICPAC meeting before the end of the calendar year?
No, but we are working on an educational session, hopefully before January. Yep. And then we have scheduled meetings starting January for the 2023 fiscal year.
Great. So we'll keep you all busy, folks. really appreciate everybody's participation. Again, I hope you had a great holiday, Thanksgiving, and I hope the holidays to come bring you all some rest, if possible, and good health. And with that, if there's no other comments for the good of the order, we'll deem the meeting adjourned. And by the way, go Dodgers. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dodgers Conklin.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, all.